The wonders of technology.
Okay, I think we've got everyone in the room who we're going to get in the room. So let's make a start. I want to introduce you, and here, I don't even know you well enough to know how to pronounce your name. It is Gabrielle Stähler. Am I correct
about
that? How about that?
You're doing
that?
Fine.
That's a good start. And let me tell you, first of all, what I'm doing up here. Because I'm not the star of the show. Gabrielle is the star of her own presentation. And when I was talking to her yesterday about her material, which is basically about the benefits of vitamin D, she was showing me her plans for what looked to me to be a bewilderingly complex presentation that was very impressive in its scope and possibly at the right level for a group of very intelligent medical students. And I said to her, you know what, there's some people here who might not actually be able to follow this, because I was having trouble following it. And I made the suggestion that, you know what we need to do, based on what little I know about Gabrielle, because I don't know her very well, you'd actually be better off just talking to someone about what you know. And she said, sure. So I said, well, look, you know what, I'll interview you. And you said?
That was a great decision to do, because I'm working much better when I can talk freely. The knowledge is just wired in my brain, and I just can go about whatever the question is, and it just, he will noodle it out of me, and then you will get all you need to know for the practical side of it, because basically what I wanted is, I wanted to educate a little bit about the chemistry behind it so that everybody knows a little bit more, but that's more for the scientific community maybe. And so I make it very easy that everybody knows, you know, how much to take, for what reason, because that was always the question. Is it vitamin D2? Is it vitamin D3? How much do you take? You know, is it toxic and all these kind of things? So that's, we keep it very simple, and I hope I'm not going into the medical terminology. So if I do, maybe Bill can help me and stop me, okay?
That's right. My job is to say, you know what, I don't understand what you're talking about. Can you back up here a little bit?
Okay.
So, first of all, who are you? I don't even know that myself.
Well, that's an intriguing question to elaborate on, but I guess what you want to know is what my background is. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So in Germany, I'm what is called Heilpraktiker. That is something that's not exactly translatable, because that profession only exists in Germany. You have physical doctors, and then you have next followed by Heilpraktiker, because Heilpraktiker is allowed to have their doctor's office as a physician also. We are allowed also to give injections. We're allowed to work as doctors, and we're even by law, and that's the funny thing, we're even allowed to do brain surgery if we don't use anesthesia, unless we can, that's true, you can look it up in the law. If we learn by a bush doctor to do, you know, a brain surgery, we can do that. You know, but we are only allowed to use anesthesia where you can do it by acupuncture or something like that. Okay, it's funny. So we have a lot of rights in Germany, you know, to help people. We're not allowed to treat venereal diseases, and we're not allowed to prescribe antibiotics. From that on, we can do almost everything that a doctor can do. So that doesn't exist in any other country, as for the information.
But that's not the whole scope of your experience. My understanding from talking with you is that you're also much more of a holistic healer, and you use some intuitive abilities, and you use some interpretive abilities, and you put this all together in a big sort of gestalt which you work with your clients with. Is this anywhere close to being
that is,
correct?
That is true. Our profession tries to look at a holistic approach, you know, to help people with their health issues, not like the doctors usually. I don't want to, you know, put anybody down there, but we really have a holistic approach, and we try as much as we can work with natural remedies as much as we can. Okay, so that to that. Of course, there are other abilities that are there, but I don't think I have to talk about these, really, you know? I think we better go on the vitamin D.
Okay, so my question to you, and it's a really live interview here, because I don't know the answer to any of these questions at all, is, given your holistic approach, mm-hmm. and what I assume is a lot of experience mm. working with clients or patients or
yes.
whatever term you want to use, why is it that what you wanted to talk about was this specialist single thing, which is vitamin D, rather than all the other things that you could talk about?
Well, vitamin D is very, very special. It's totally something different than any kind of other thing you call a vitamin. It is so multifunctional, and also within the last 8 years there has been done a lot of research that has stunning results, and it's so easy. This is why I want to talk about it. It's so easy to use for everybody. It's a single little pill, and you can use it for so many things. You can buy it. It's not so much that you have to go for a prescription, so you can really help yourself with it. And especially, it's the new results that the researchers found within the last 8 years, why I want to talk about it, and because it really can act on many, many areas. So here, you know that vitamin D usually is connected to bones, to calcium uptake in your bones, and if you have vitamin D, you don't get osteoporosis, and that's the stuff that almost everybody knows. But then there are so many more items. There are 16 cancer types that partly can be prevented to 83% by just taking these little vitamins. And there has not been much interest in furthering that kind of research, funding it or any, because vitamin D is so easy to subtract, you know, and to make this little pill, it doesn't cost much. So there is not much earned by the pharmaceutical companies. So nobody really wants to fund the research for that. So now we are lucky we have researchers that worked on that for 8 to 10 years, and now we have the results. So it acts on bone health anyway, that's known, but it acts on 16 cancer types. It acts on infections and inflammations. It goes into your nerves and the brain, okay? So how does it go into your bones, and how does it go onto your brain? It helps MS. It helps the immune system. There are a lot of new finds for the immune system. All you can see there, tuberculosis, you can easily combat it with vitamin D. If you have something going on, inflammation in your mouth for the older generation amongst us, you know, you can use it there. It's very beneficial for diabetes. So
let me back up just a moment,
yes.
If I could, because one of the reasons why I was interested in talking with you about this subject is that our insider contact, Henry Deacon, and I think you met him in Amsterdam.
Yes.
Ever since we've known him, he was saying to us over and over again, you got to take vitamin D3, you got to take D3. He was specifying the doses. He was writing these things on internet forums. And he was anxious that people should understand this information. And clearly, you share his perspective about how important this is and how unknown or misunderstood this is. And I want to back up and ask you the question, because this is the first question I asked Henry. What's the difference between vitamin D and vitamin D3? Most people don't even know things like that.
This is exactly the point why I'm doing this. I want people to understand that. See, the thing is, first of all, this thing is called vitamin. It's called vitamin D. And here it starts. It has different forms. It starts to be a provitamin. It's made in the skin. I'm going to explain that a little bit later. And then it starts turning through some kind of a metabolism in your body into a very active form. And when it is in this active form, then it really can work in the body, and then it is a hormone. And a hormone works totally different than just any kind of other substance. A hormone can go onto your genes. A lot of cascades of actions, of regulations in your body. For example, it can suppress renin, which means that your blood pressure goes down, that you're not so much likely to get a stroke. It regulates all sorts of processes. And the amazing thing about vitamin D that they found was that there are receptors for that vitamin in almost all of your body cells. And this is the answer to why it acts on your lungs, on your bones, on your brain, on you name it. They haven't known this before.
Okay.
Okay.
So what you're saying here is that it has a very broad spectrum of benefits,
that's
which
true.
Are not necessarily well understood by people.
Yes. It is very important that you know the different forms of vitamin D, it's important for you to tell your doctor. Because the thing is, doctors, if you go to them, most of them, they don't know what to test for. You say, I want a vitamin D test. And the doctor goes and looks what test of the two tests it can make is most expensive. And then he says to the laboratory, okay, you're going to have this test. But there are two ways that you can test, and one way is only valuable for you to know what your blood levels are. And also, to get vitamin D tested, it's not very expensive. It doesn't cost much.
Is this something that people need to do? I mean, I've never been to a doctor to have my vitamin levels tested for anything in all of my life. I just kind of go by my own intuition, or by what I've read in a book, or by what a friend recommends, or sometimes by kinesiology, muscle testing, or whatever. Okay. But I've never been to a doctor to say, hey, test me out for my vitamins.
Yes. You can go like he can, or he does. If you have that intuition for your body, you can. You can try that out, but you never know. Did you really raise your level or not? You know, also, it can get very expensive. Keep on shoveling the vitamin D in your body, you know, thinking you need that much. And in reality, you just have to do it for a while only, maybe for 4 or 5 months. You raise your dose, and I will talk about the dosage, and then afterwards, you need only a little bit to maintain that dose. And so it doesn't get so expensive for you.
Okay.
You know, and then there are also factors that can really hinder the vitamin D uptake.
So what's the difference between D and D3?
Okay.
This is the first question I asked Henry.
D and D3, I can show you. We have first this D3, and the D3 is something that's made in the skin. And for that production of D3 in the skin, it is crucial that you're out in the sun. Just be out in the sun like a happy child and playing outside. That's all it needs for your skin to make the form of vitamin D3. And that is just a precursor to the active form. Okay? So, now, what's the next form? The next form is calcidiol. The first form is made in your skin, as you can see. The second form is made here in your liver. And still, that stuff that's made in the liver, it's called, and that you got to know.
Is that what my liver looks like?
Mm-hmm. It's on a plate there,
okay.
The picture. So, you have a... You get some appetite, you know, you can eat liver and you get a lot of vitamin D. That's true, you know, any kind of liver has that. So I have to bother you a little bit with that calcidiol. And the calcidiol here has a formula, and I cannot point to it now because I don't have a pointer. But it says here it's 25, and then it has an OH, and then it has a D3 behind it. And that's the substance you really need to keep in mind, because that is exactly what is measured in the blood, where you can see your real blood levels from. That stuff from the liver gets transported into your bloodstream and is just cruising around there. So the next step, it is then transported into your kidneys. Okay, and then in the kidneys it is metabolized, or it's hydroxylized, or whatever you want to call it, it's changed into calcitriol. And the calcitriol has a little 1.25 there. So these are the two things that a doctor can measure in your blood, the 25 OHD3 and the 125 dihydroxy, you know, vitamin D.
So what you're saying here is that there's like a kind of cycle of absorption, which naturally starts with the sun.
Yes.
And then as it goes through various stages in the cycle in the body,
yes,
it actually changes its form.
Yes.
And that's the different names which are applied
exactly
to it.
Exactly. And this is also the answer to what is D3 and what is D2. Now,
so
we have here...
Why should we take D3, which is the substitute for the sun on the skin, rather than going straight to the end product, which is vitamin D? Or have I misunderstood that?
No, you haven't misunderstood that, but the body has to make it itself. Okay, you can only extract the precursor and to put it in a little pill. I mean, you can also do the other one, but that's much more difficult. And then I have to say something, please. The D2 that you see in the very bottom, that is a vitamin D that's derived from plants. Everything that is called vitamin D3 comes from animals. But don't be afraid. It's not like you have to poke the animal and take a skin out or take the liver out and extract it. It is made out of the lanolin, out of the little grease that's in the hair of the sheep. Okay? And that's so easy to produce. And that is put in these little pills when you see D3. Now, really, some scientists say D3 works as well as this one that you can get from the plants. From what I have seen in the studies, it's not true. You know, you can support a person with a D2, but if you put D2 from the plants in your system, it just declines real fast. You know, after some month, there's nothing much left. You know, when you do the same dose of vitamin D3, it gets stored in your body. And that is also important. Vitamin D gets stored in your fatty tissue in the body, you know, after a certain amount.
Okay, so what I think you're saying, mm-hmm. then, is that if you're confused about what form of D to take, mm-hmm. take D3,
that's
because
correct.
It's the most natural substitute, because you're going straight to the source of where it all comes from, which
exactly.
is the sun. And if you're in the winter time, in the flu season, for example, or in some different climate where you're not going to get a lot of sun, or in a job where you don't get a lot of sun, then D3 is going to be the best possible substitute for that. And then your body knows that's what true. To do with it. Is that right?
That is true. That is absolutely correct. You know, the thing about vitamin D is also why I'm so enthused about it. It's also an antibiotic. You know, the thing is that your immune cells have receptors for vitamin D. So as soon as this D3 floats along in your blood, you know, and hits one of these receptors in your cell immediately starts changing it into the active form, locally, on the point where it's needed. And that has not been known before in the scientific community. It's ranging amongst the 15 hottest items in the nutritional community, this vitamin D, and this is also why I'm talking about it.
Now, just now, you said it was a natural antibiotic.
Yes.
And at this point, this is one of these medical words that a lot of people will understand, you know. And I want to ask you...
They had to fight with antibiotics, to tell you the truth. They're getting stuffed with that stuff by the doctors usually.
For sure, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a whole thing about antibiotics where you can go about the damage that they do, and I understand that. But is it also, and this is very relevant for the topic of the day, is it also an antiviral?
Yes, it is both. It is an antibacterial and it's an antiviral. It depends if the virus is encapsulated or not. If it's an encapsulated virus, and we have that with this influenza, it's an encapsulated virus. And this is why I'm also talking about it, because if you take relatively high doses at the onset of an influenza, you can really catch it. Besides, vitamin D makes a really good mood. You know, when the sun is up and you get in a good mood, the same happens, at least personally to me, when I take vitamin D at a certain level.
When you mean you can really catch it, you mean you can really knock it out?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can. Well, I don't want to say that too loud, you know. You can knock a lot of things out with it, to be honest, you know.
Is it one of these things that doctors aren't allowed to say?
Doctors can say that, you know, but I want us to have vitamin D for a long, long time, you know, without anybody taking it away from us, you know. Because now going back to the other question, it was like, what are the dosages? See, the thing is, when you look into laws or the Drug and Food Administration or these kind of people, they tell you, you need only 200 units per day, you know, for all age classes, from infant on till you're about, I think, 60 or something like that. And your common sense says, that can't be, you know, an infant is a little body. It needs less, maybe, than a grown-up. And now I want to tell you what the real doses are. I mean, the doses that scientifically are proven to really impact. If we take only 400 units per day, and I will show you on the slides when I've got the slide, then we can almost move nothing. You know, there were 400 units of vitamin D given to breast cancer women, and the control group they had did get nothing. Okay, and then they checked the blood levels, and by 400 units of vitamin D, the blood levels didn't move up at all. So what's happening with vitamin D? It really depends on the dosage, how much of the illness you can prevent, or how much of what you've got you can help with that. So the dosage is crucial. We have something, for example, in Germany, you're allowed to have only products that show you 200 to 400 units of vitamin D, you know.
That was my next question, that in Europe here, and in England. I've only seen vitamin D sold up to 200 or 400 international units. And then you look at the instructions for the dosage, and it just says take one per day or something like that. But you're saying that this is not nearly enough to be effective for what it can do. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And what I say is really based on many, many, I don't know how many studies I have worked through, you know, to see that the scientists say that has all to be upregulated. Because the thing is, I tell you what, if you're out in the sun, and let's assume you're in your bikini or in your swim and your bathing pants, and you expose your body only for 10 to 15 minutes to the sun, only, okay, your body makes 10,000 to 20,000 units of vitamin D. Sounds a lot, but that's what your body makes naturally. So you can get vitamin D free without paying anything if you really walk into the sun.
So part of the problem here, and as a holistic practitioner, of course you will recognize this, which is that it's our lifestyle which is part of the problem, because we're working in offices, we're working indoors, we're staying at home all day, the children aren't going into the garden to play, and all of a sudden we're deprived of what is a natural heritage, like a form of free energy. It's all coming there from the sun all the time, and we're not even going out there. Is that?
Yeah, that's correct. There are many, many factors, you know, that block off the sun, and to tell you the truth, about 65 to 95% of the whole world population is deficient in vitamin D, and we see the consequences. Vitamin D really has to do with all the illnesses like heart diseases and cancers and diabetes and all that. And
all
we
the things
why
that are on the increase.
Why? Yeah, and we wonder why does it increase? And yet, we're really, as Bill's saying, we're sitting in these offices. We're not exposing our skin to the sun. And then we would have really everything. And I told you, 15 to 20 minutes only, but full body exposure, not just your face, you know, not just your hands or any of it. You know, your full body. And then you can have all you need in the summertime.
But we're told that we've got to cover ourselves with sunblock to make sure we don't get skin cancer. What does that do to vitamin D?
That's true. See, a lot of the problems we have are really due to us being brainwashed by a lot of different sayings. One saying is, "Oh, don't put your child out into the sun unless you have," thank you, Dave, "unless you have your sunblockers up." And now we're coming to a crucial theme here. We have to understand a little bit about the sun, because the sun is, what we have been told, is very misunderstood. The sun has a lot of different rays that it just puts beneficially down on us, okay? It has the X-rays, it has a part of visible light that we can see, it has an infrared part on the right side, okay? So the infrared part, you know, these little lamps that you can put on, you know, when you have a cold or something, with the infrared light, it puts heat out, and that's very important also for the formation of the vitamin D. So we have ultraviolet light, and in this light there's something important. We have three different categories, and you have to understand that, because then you look into maybe getting the suntan from your tanning studios or something like that. And you got to know one thing here. In the ultraviolet light, we have three different forms. The UVC light ray, we have the UVB light ray, and we have the UVA. So now what's going to happen? They have a little bit different wavelength, and so they penetrate our body in a different way. The UVC is absorbed by the ozone layer right away. We don't have to deal with that.
Except that the ozone layer is getting thinner.
That's true, and then it's getting a problem for us also, as we heard yesterday, you know, the skin can burn from that. And now we have something, what is really dangerous for your skin, what makes your skin wrinkle and old, is the UVA. It's a very aggressive kind of ray. It goes deep into your skin, it changes something on your cells under your skin, the melanocytes, and that is harmful. That we want to block out, okay, if we can. Now, there's something else I want to convey. For example, you know, these offices, they're built so that the sunlight can come in. They're built out of glass. You have window. But the window filters out the UVB that we really need and lets through the UVA. So we are basically baking in our offices under the wrong ray.
Are you saying that it's the UVB UVB that's beneficial.
The UVB is beneficial, and we're going into that. See, the UVB is beneficial because that helps to convert something that comes from a cholesterol that's sitting in your skin into the precursor for the vitamin D3 that you really need.
So our modern lifestyle is, for some reason, conspiring against us to get what we really need. And here I am thinking, well, why should we be surprised at that? But this is just another way in which, metaphorically speaking, our modern society is shooting ourselves in the foot here. We're not being supported in the way that we could be.
Not at all. We're also told, if we don't use sunblockers, you know, we're going to get skin cancer. It's all that thing. There are wonderful scientists out there in America that show by scientific proof that you rather get melanomas when you're not out in the sun. Why is that? If you don't go out into the sun, your body is not making vitamin D. And when you have D3 in your body working in it, it is going against cancer. It's going against skin cancer. So when you have a very light skin, of course, you be careful. You go out in the sun maybe for 2 minutes, and then you raise the exposure of your body in the sun. Always a little bit more till your skin gets a little bit red, but not more. Okay? So when your skin tans, it is also a protection against the aggressive waves of the sun. See the thing? You know, you need a little bit protection, but not as much that the sun cannot go through and make the vitamin D.
So, I just did a little question and answer with myself here, because I was going to say, well, where do we get our vitamin D from then? And then I realized that your answer would be, well, actually, we don't.
That's true. And that's the problem. There are actually only 4 sources you can get vitamin D from. And the first and the happiest is you just jump out in nature, you know, and expose your body and just really let your body be flooded with the sun. And that's the first. The second one, you really do have to supplement, because who of you can be out in the sun for 15 to 20 minutes, or who knew it that they had to do it? Or who knew that they could do it in their lunch break maybe, you know? And that only pertains to summer. Yeah. Then we have food. But there is very, very little vitamin D in your food. You have it in fatty fish, okay? You have it in salmon, and you have it in the fresh wild salmon, much higher doses than in the farmed salmon. So you have to look for the fresh stuff. But it's not enough.
So the connection that's just made with me, then, is that this is another reason why the Eskimos, the Inuit, are so healthy. It's not just because they're eating the fish oil, but it's because they're getting the vitamin D3, even though they don't expose themselves to the sun.
That's true.
That's interesting.
That's in the first place. And here is our government that says, 200 units only, and we are starving. With 200 units in your blood, you can almost not prevent what we call rickets. You know, when the bones get soft in children and they get this O-shaped legs and they're very ill. This is what you maybe can prevent with that. And here I just have the foods up where you can see how much you can get, and it's almost nothing. You would have to eat so much fatty fish and so much salmon, you know, that you get sick in the evening, you know, and you wouldn't have enough of the vitamin D that you would need. So food is a little bit you can get it from, but not much.
You'd have to eat 0.5 kilogram of wild salmon every day in order to protect itself against the swine flu.
Yeah. No, for the swine flu you need more.
You need more.
Vitamin D is really doses depending. I mean, it depends on how much you put into your body, you know, in order to raise your blood level. Here it is, what I said to you, 15 to 20 minutes, 10,000 to 20,000 units vitamin D are made naturally in your body. So here's the Food and Nutrition Board says 200 units per day for all people. And when you're 50 to 70 years, then you're allowed to eat 400 per day.
Now just pause there, because it's important to understand what you said. That's not your recommendation. That's the official recommendation.
Exactly.
And you are saying this is way too less to be useful.
It's not only me saying, it's just like the scientific community has proven it over and over and over again. I have brought here a list where you can see how much your blood levels have to be up to prevent diabetes, to prevent cancer. I will show that to you a little bit later. So now, when you look at toxicity, there are people around that their only duty is to tell everybody, food is poison, this is poison, that is poison, you can get toxic from it, you can die from it. Okay, and here I did something. For 40,000 units of vitamin D can kill a rat, okay? 40,000 units, and you have to really find that anywhere. But then, equivalently, for a human being that's 75 kilos big, you need 7 million units, and it's nowhere. I mean, you would have to eat so much to kill yourself. It's almost impossible.
That's proportional by body weight.
That's proportional by body weight. Okay, and that's what I want to convey. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of taking normal doses. There is no threat. If you're even taking up to 30,000 units, 10 to 30,000 units, there is no threat for you. Okay, that's proven. And here I did a little bit something for you saying, or to keep in mind, how much, for whom, and for what reason. You know, babies, it's a very important issue. And maybe I say a little bit about pregnancy. And maybe you have friends that are pregnant or yourself. That's very, very important. Because a lot of your health that you have in later years accompanying through your life is set and programmed during pregnancy. And if the mother is deficient, the baby doesn't get enough while it's forming its nerves. And there is, in mice or in rats, a study has been done. If you feed a bunch of rats about some units of vitamin D and the other group you don't feed with it, the babies of the rats that were not fed with vitamin D during the pregnancy of the mama rat, these little rats had diabetes pretty soon. So that's what's happening. It takes a little while till the illnesses show, but they're really laid down in pregnancy, the pattern for the health that you're going to have. So please tell everybody that's pregnant. They have to take up to 6,000 units per day. I know my friends that are pregnant. They're full-time working pregnant women behind these glass windows, and they don't get any sun too much. And then you have to know something later when the baby is there. Where does the baby get the vitamin D from? Before it has been dependent that the mother feeds herself correctly. But then when it's out, where does it get it? So now, in Germany, we have, in the hospitals, the doctors say, well, we have to supplement the babies. And they do. And this is why normally babies are less sufficient than anybody else, but only in the start of their life. Only in the first year, maybe. They say, when the baby is born in summer, feed it through the winter with vitamin D for a year, and that's it. Kind of like that, you know. And you have to know, when a mother makes milk, and in this milk, only 30% of the concentration of the vitamin D that's in the mother's blood goes to the baby. Only 30%. So when the mother is down with her vitamin D level in the blood, the baby isn't getting much.
Okay, so what caught my attention there with that slide, it says if you live at 30 degrees latitude or higher, that's because the higher latitudes get less sunlight, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And I have no idea what 30 degrees latitude is. Where is that in?
Okay. We know when you look at your Earth, you have these little things running down, you know, latitudes and longitudes, and we have the equator. If you go up north from the equator, about 42 degrees, and that I just know by heart, 42 degrees, you know, latitude, you go up north, Munich is located there, then you have not enough sun. So everybody that lives further away from the equator, like from the 30th or 40th latitude on, really needs to supplement vitamin D.
So what you're really saying is everyone in Europe.
Everyone in Europe, okay. Anyway, everybody in Boston, everybody up north.
Or everyone in Australia. If you're
also,
okay.
Yes, that's important because we don't have that much sun. And
well,
then there's also a problem. You know, you think black people, you know, they absorb a lot. You know, black people, they're good, they're made for being in the sun. And now black people, they're working everywhere in the world. You know, they're working in Norway, they're working as workers somewhere in Canada. And these people have the lowest level of vitamin D. And they're the most sufficient, the most deficient in vitamin D. Because I told you before, the darker the skin is, the more your skin and your system is protected from the sun rays. The less the sun goes into their skins because they are so dark. They're not making much vitamin D.
It's a natural sunblock.
It's a natural sunblock. The darker your skin is. So that has two sides. On one part, it really helps you from the aggressive rays of the sun. On the other side, it doesn't let the UVB rays into your skin to produce vitamin D.
Okay. This is interesting stuff to me. I have a really interesting question but you may choose to answer it later. And
go ahead.
One of the things that's going through my mind is the connection between the modern plagues, almost, of mm-hmm. diabetes, mm. cancer, and heart disease. Mm-hmm. And it would be very interesting to plot the rise of that against some kind of a measure of our decreased natural exposure to sunlight as a result of our changing 20th century, 21st century lifestyle.
Run that by me again.
Okay. I'm correlating the increases in diabetes, heart disease,
yes.
and cancer with our decreasing exposure to the sun in the course of our daily lives. As our lives have changed since we were all working in the fields, working in our gardens back in the 19th century, for those of us who were around there.
Yeah.
And I hadn't made that correlation with the sun. I'd made that correlation with a bunch of other things like, you know, sugar in the diet. This is another correlation that's been made. But maybe this is a more general, holistic question. Maybe you want to pick that up later, because I know you want to give some more information about the vitamin.
No, the thing is, I need another presentation, and I don't know how to change here in these windows. And this is why there are some slides that I really want to show are not there. And now I can do it without the slide also, which I'm going to do now, because what I want to relate really is how much we really damage our sun intake by what we do and how we live, and not only by what we do, but also what the weather does, what the latitude does. So now, here we go. If you block, the sun is blocked by many, many things, and then you will understand how come that. Also, I say most of you are deficient. If you really would look into your blood levels, you would see that. And I go into what is a healthy blood level also, because I think it's important to know. You know, for those people who really want to be responsible and just check their blood levels and see how much they should really take, you know, unless to go just take it, you know, you can. There are safe doses you can take, and I can tell you what they are. And then you can go ahead and buy it and take it. Take it for 5 months and then go and let your blood levels checked. You know, so what blocks our sun? Naturally, clouds. Okay, clouds. In winter, it's snowing. There is no sun coming down. So in winter, it's very important for us to supplement it. And this is also why the correlation is. Why are there so much colds in winter? We are warm. We have warm clothes. We are not freezing, and yet we have the colds in the cold season. And not in the summer so much. There are some flus that you get in the summer, you know, but not that much.
That's an obvious intuitive link between sunlight and flu.
That's true.
Isn't it?
That's true. Okay. Then there's something else, what I noticed, because I'm out a lot. And then as soon, and I don't know if you know, probably you will know what chemtrails are.
Chemtrails. Tell us about chemtrails.
Okay, I'm not going to talk about chemtrails. Okay, there's so much more to say than that. But if you look up in the sky and you see the airplanes going, and then behind the airplanes there is this white kind of trail. And in earlier days, you know, my father showed that to me. And in earlier days, you know, they immediately dissolved behind the airplane. As the airplane was flying, the white stuff dissolved behind it. And now when I look up, it doesn't dissolve. It makes patterns in the air, you know. And these white streaks in the air start getting bigger and bigger
And it stays there all day.
And then it stays there all day. Because I noticed, I mean, I'm a sun freak. I love the sun. And when I look out of my window and I see the mountains and I see the sun, then I think, oh, that would be a good day to go out in the mountains. And when I'm up at 8 and I see that, and then I just delay a little bit and do this and do that, and it gets 11 o'clock, then I looked out and I saw that all of a sudden there was a film of some kind of funny grayish cloud there, or not really a cloud, just a film, and immediately the sun was blocked. So I said, oh, I'm not going to go on the mountains because it's gone. But I watched that now for many, many years, and I thought something is wrong with that. And that's what's called chemtrails. It's put out in the air, and I guess you know what this is. There's a barium salt in it, and there is aluminum in it, and they do it by intent to block the sun rays. And you see it immediately when you're out, and I had this experience this recently, when you're out and the sun is shining, you're happy, the sun gets on your skin, and all of a sudden there flies this airplane. It takes only, and I photographed it, it takes only a few minutes, and the sun is blocked, and your body feels cold, and you start freezing, even the sun is shining. That was my recent experience when I was out, and I was amazed how much chemtrails really block off the sun. You know, so we have something new here that we didn't have not 20 years ago, which is very, very important. I mean, chemtrails are a theme by themselves, so we're not going to go into that. You can just Google and see what it is. But that's something. Then we have pollution on top of all that blocks our sun. So then finally comes summer. Okay, we can go out into the sun. And what are we going to do? We're going to put sunblockers on us. And the funny thing is, there are also studies. The moment the industry put sunblockers out, and the sunblockers changed chemically, not only that there's poison in the sunblockers, you know, but it blocks out, as I said before, the wrong rays. The beneficial ones they block off, and the aggressive ones they let through. There are very many different kind of sunblockers. And it really shows that the melanoma rate rose exactly with the millions that the industry earned with these sunblockers, selling them to people. Okay. So now we have summer, we have the sun, we put sunblockers on. Some people say we don't go out in the sun because we can get melanoma. That's what I said, being brainwashed. And our lifestyle, you know, as Bill said before. So that contributes greatly. We have also a few other things that are happening in our bodies, which is important. We have conditions, health conditions, that also are not very beneficial, you know, to absorb vitamin D or D3, because we need to have a healthy kidney and we need to have a healthy liver.
Because it goes from the skin to the liver to the kidneys.
To the kidneys, as I showed. And so we have to have these healthy. There are people that don't have that healthy, people that drink. You know, they have problems with the liver. So the liver doesn't make the vitamin D. Okay, so then we have a colon that might not be healthy. All the diseases like Crohn's disease, all the inflammational diseases that you can have in your colon hinder also the vitamin D action, you know, and the calcium absorption, and then you get brittle bones. So there are these things, illnesses that you can have. And then also there is something else, and I have to look deeper into that. There is a certain kind of medication when you get it prescribed from your doctor. It blocks off the intake of vitamin D also, and especially anti-seizure, so anti-epileptic prescriptions or drugs. When you have somebody that has that, it's very difficult for them to get enough vitamin D. You have to supplement differently or a little bit more, or glucocorticoids and things like that. Also, during chemotherapy, there's something funny. They supplemented people that were having chemotherapy, and these people couldn't take up vitamin D as well as people that also had cancer and didn't have chemotherapy. So these are things also to look into.
A conspiracy theorist would think that maybe somebody wanted to make us ill.
Well, I'm not going to answer to this really and elaborate on that, because we can sit hours here, you know, to go into that.
Okay, so back to simple practical advice for people.
Exactly.
Because this has been, I mean, I'm assuming that the people in the audience, mm-hmm. both here in the room and on the internet, have been learning as much as I have here, because I didn't know this stuff. And I'm back to that question that here in Europe you can only get vitamin D3, as far as I'm aware, in bottles full of 400 international unit size capsules or pills.
Well,
but you're saying that this isn't even enough. You'd be rattling because you'd have to take 10 or 20 pills a day. And most people don't do that because it feels wrong. Where do you get your vitamin D from if you don't go out in the sunshine every day?
First of all, I go out into the sunlight a lot. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's my prime vitamin D source to keep healthy and happy. And, of course, I'm supplementing. And there are sources where you can get it with a higher dose. The doses you have to take, basically, which is safe for you. It's a lower limit of being safe with vitamin D if you're ever afraid. Okay, you don't have to. Because up to 10,000, 30,000 units to take per day, nothing is going to happen. Your blood is not getting hypercalcemic. You know, you don't get too much calcium in your body when you do 10,000 units per day. But the safe lower limit is 2,000 units per day. Okay, but that, when your levels are low, is not enough. What I would suggest, go onto 5,000 units per day and take that 5 months, because it takes a long time till you can raise your blood levels. You know, when you do it only a month, your blood level will not raise much. You know, you have to do it for about 4 to 5 months. Really fill your batteries.
Because you're making up for a backlog.
You're making up for a backlog, yes. And later, when your levels are at normal, which I want to look into, you know, or at least to a beneficial level that you can keep yourself healthy and prevent all these cancer things that you can get, breast cancer, prostate cancer, diabetes, and all this kind of stuff. You know, when you're at a level where you can prevent that, it will take you only 2,000 units per day to keep it up. And that doesn't cost much. It costs you between, I don't know, 15 and 20 euros, depending what it is. You know, for a bottle that lasts you for quite a long time. And in summer, you can leave these 2,000 units out completely when you expose yourself to sun.
This is so interesting for me, again, just as I said at the start of this little presentation, this is exactly what Henry Deacon, who is an electronics specialist working deeply on the inside, but he's a very, very smart, well-informed man. He has been telling this so many times, I can't remember how many emails he'd sent us about vitamin D3. And what may be pertinent for this audience here, and I suspect, I have no idea what time it is, but I suspect we're probably coming to the end of this quite soon, is in the context of a possible epidemic, pandemic of something, whether it's a mild H1N1 or whether they put some pepper in the soup and maybe it ends up with something that's a little more serious, what levels should people be taking then? Are you suggesting that waiting until you wake up one morning feeling bad and then going out to get the D3, that's too late? Is this what you're saying?
Of course not. First of all, why I'm also sitting here is just I want to remind you to really start now. Getting your levels up prevents a lot. Really start now. Start now while you still can get this, while you still can get these dosages of vitamin D. You can get it. 2,000 units in a bottle, in one pill. You can get it 5,000 units. You can get it in America, but also there are sources here. If you're interested, I can name some of you. I will be here. You can ask, you know, how to possibly, you know, get some of these things. And then when there's really an onset of something, you know, you feel you're getting a flu or something, then really start dosing it high. Start dosing it 5,000 units, and then you go another hour and take another 5,000 units, and then you wait an hour, you take another 5,000 units. So that makes up to 50,000 units. Hmm. I told you before, the body makes naturally 10,000 to 20,000, so don't be afraid. People that are lifeguards out on the coast, they're sitting in the sun day by day, okay? Their skin doesn't burn anymore, and they make these amounts of vitamin D in their blood naturally. How can be nature, you know, more toxic than the dose of 5,000 units?
Now, as an antiviral, which is, as you explained it is, will it work as effectively against something mild, like swine flu is mild, or something much more serious, like avian flu, God forbid if that should hit us, is the effect of the vitamin D as an antiviral as effective against all these viruses? Or, for instance, if there's a serious pandemic of something very nasty, do you need even more? How does it work?
I would suggest you take more. I mean, I personally would do it. I'm very careful with anybody else. See, the thing is, if somebody comes as a patient to my office, I will have them, first of all, take the vitamin D, but also, rather, I would like to test them first. I talk to my laboratory, and what I do is a screening. I don't only test the vitamin D level, but I have a screening that shows me three values if your kidneys are working. It shows me three values if your calcium uptake is okay or not, you know. So I do that for my patients. Then I know exactly, is everything working fine? What is your exact blood level? Do I have to give you 10,000 units, you know, per day to make you just have enough, you know, for the start? Or do I have to give you only 5,000 units? It's a safer way, okay, if I measure the blood levels.
But what you're saying is that you can't overdose on this without eating a polar bear every day.
That's
right?
That's correct. You can't. And basically, the values of intake we are talking about here, you cannot overdose it. There is no chance. There was a study, and there was given 100,000 units in one shot to one person, I mean, to a group of people, you know, a day. And the blood levels rose, but then they got stuck somewhere. And then it took about 3 months till the curve declined, you know, to a blood level where it was a little bit low again. So it had the benefit when you have people that are in psychiatric hospitals and you don't want to feed them vitamin D every day. You know, it's kind of, they don't want to take it or it's too much a problem. You give them a very high dose. And as I said, it's getting stored. And then slowly the body takes out of what it needs till in 3 months it runs down. And I said the doses was 100,000 units. That's a lot. And they showed no signs of toxicity.
Okay.
That's a proven fact by some scientists.
So the summary, and let me risk a summary and run it past you about what I think I've learned here, is that we're all likely to be deficient in vitamin D3.
Correct.
If we're concerned, especially as we're heading into a period of lower sunlight and the fact that we're in Europe and not living on the equator, therefore we should be supplementing ourselves. And if we're supplementing ourselves, we should be supplementing ourselves at least 5,000 units a day.
And the lower safe limit is 2,000 for you guys, and then usually you really should take up to 5,000 per day, and then it would be correct.
And we don't want to wait until people are surrounding us with flu. We need to be able to. We need to start now, as to build up this protection, because we're probably building up a backlog. And if we want to get hold of this stuff, just now I heard you say that you can give some advice to people if they come up to you privately.
Yes.
I imagine there's a long line of 50 people going to try and find you after this presentation. But you can order it on the internet from America and deliver into Europe. Is this correct?
You could also do that. Possibly you could do that, yes. But then also you have to check on the quality that you're getting, and they have to make sure it's the D3. You know, and this is why I like to work with certain people together that have a fine quality of vitamin D. You know, where does it come from? What are the sheep like? What do they feed them with? You know what? You know, okay. I'm looking for quality. As we heard, Germans have quality, and that's something that I really look deeply into. What kind of supplement? Supplement is not the same than supplement, you know. That's why I refer to a particular source where you can get it easily, and that's what I do.
That's interesting. Actually, here, this is something that you didn't know about me, probably. Yeah. I'm a trained kinesiologist.
Mm-hmm.
I've never actually practiced, but I remember studying a long time ago that when you're testing using kinesiology, which is muscle testing for different kind of vitamins, you can test completely differently on five or six different bottles, and they've all got vitamin C on the side, or they've all got vitamin D on the side. They're made in different factories from different sources. The body treats them very, very differently. It's not just what it says on the label. And I do know that.
Yes, that's correct. I know that also. I know that deeply, and this is why I look so deeply into supplements. I look almost all the stuff I look up, you know, and I check it on my own body, and then I see what it does. And I really do it over a month to find out what it really does, because I'm pretty sensitive in my body, and I can find out what it does the moment I put the substance into my body and let it run in my body for 2 to 3 hours. And so then I know you can produce a lot of these vitamins artificially. You can produce vitamin B artificially, you know, just in the laboratory. It's not the same than when you extract it out of plants. Yep. And besides, some of the products that I would suggest also have a little bit of vitamin E in it. And that is important because vitamin D is fat soluble. Okay, so you have to have a little bit cholesterol in your blood, you know, like it or not, because otherwise you cannot make the vitamin D form that you need.
And as a naturopath, I would expect you also to be saying, learn to listen to your body, because it's probably trying to tell you what it needs if only you would listen. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, but then what would I say, or what would your body say when the sun comes out? You just leave your job, you know, and you say, I'm going to go out in the sun and I don't want to work any longer, you know, because my body needs sun.
Sometimes we don't have the choice, that's right. But I guess, I mean, I know that I don't listen to my body enough. Mm. And the reason for that is because there's so much other noise.
That's true.
There's a lot of noise in my head, there's a lot of noise in your world, I've got a lot of problems in my life, blah, blah, blah. And we don't listen to this little persistent voice that says, you know, I need this, or I need a glass of water, or I need some fresh vegetables, or...
Well,
we've learned that ability. We've unlearned that ability. We've lost that ability, I think, a lot of
that is true, but that's another theme. That's a big theme.
Another seminar.
That's another seminar. It's another psychological thing, how we're programmed by our parents not to get what we really want, not to honor ourselves, you know, for what we really need. Or then you have a husband or wife that says, what do you need that crap for, you know, and you shrug your shoulders and you don't dare. And many people out like that, you know, dominated by other people and not being able to really fulfill what they really need for themselves and to be respectful towards themselves. And then how can they be respectful towards others and, you know, and the needs of other people that say, oh, I need to go out in the sun. I say, oh, you're lazy. What do you have to go out in the sun? You know, that's a lot. That's another story, you know, where all these things come from.
Okay.
And there's one thing I want to say. It goes a little bit back to the matter, which is important. See, I said that vitamin D is stored in the fatty tissue. Okay, so then all the people that have a little bit more fat on their body say, oh, this is great, you know, I have a lot of vitamin D in my body. My body can really take it from my fat cells. But I tell you one thing, the bigger your fatty tissue is, the more the vitamin D gets stuck in the fat. And the people, the bigger they are, they have very little serum levels of vitamin D because it gets stuck in the fat and it doesn't go out in the blood. Okay. So obese people really have, on top of all the problems they have, the problem they don't get enough vitamin D. And I thought that was important to say. So get all your friends that are a little bit too big, you know, to down you know, their risks of getting ill.
Okay. So I found that really interesting. Thank you. I hope everybody else did as well. And it's part of the big picture of how we should be thinking, preparing ourselves mentally, physically, spiritually, for whatever it is that may be in store for us over the next few years. And that's a wonderful contribution. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thank you. I want to say one more last thing, and it came into my mind yesterday, you know, when we heard that your skin can get burned and we maybe have to disappear in some caves and under the earth and I don't know what, you know, then I thought, well, store your vitamin D up, because when you're in the cave, you're not getting any sun, you know? That was just my last idea to yesterday. Okay, thank you very much.
Those guys in the underground bases are going to get pretty sick, maybe.
Maybe, if they don't have any equivalent lights. Yeah, thank you.